Welcome to the Adventures of Alice and Bob. Today, Mark is speaking with Dr. Jessica Barker, a cybersecurity expert and co-founder of Cygenta. Join us as they discuss a wide range of cybersecurity topics, including how hackers are using AI to enhance their phishing attacks, and the romance scammers playbook. We'll even take a trip with Dr. Barker to meet Prince William at Windsor Castle. All of this and more right now on The Adventures of Alice and Bob.
Jessica, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well, thanks. Great to be here.
Cool. Yeah, no, I'm excited to talk to you. And maybe just by, you know, kind of way of intro, I'm just, everybody always has kind of interesting paths of how they find themselves, you know, working in cybersecurity and kind of in this field in the first place. And I'm just curious, kind of, what was your path down this road in the first place?
I would never have expected to be working in cybersecurity. My background is in sociology, politics. I worked in urban regeneration, did my PhD in civic design, which is an engineering discipline. But really, I was looking at the impact of the internet on society and places. Huh. And as I was finishing up my PhD, I got an email through a contact of mine saying, would you be interested in talking about a job in cybersecurity? So I Googled, what is cybersecurity?
Yeah.
and thought, how would I work in cybersecurity? But I pursued that opportunity, and the company that had got in touch, specializing in the defense sector, ended up hiring me. And that was 13 or so years ago, and haven't looked back since.
What sort of security did you kind of start with? I mean, that must have been kind of an interesting transition of sounds like you were focused on a few different things there, but the jump from kind of civil engineering, if I heard you right, to then kind of diving in the security in general, like what was that transition like?
It was a steep learning curve for sure, but my work prior to coming into this industry always was through a lens of people. What makes people tick? What makes people behave as they do? And how is XYZ affecting people? And so when I came into cybersecurity, it took a while for it to click how that side of my work applied in this industry. But of course, once it did click, it makes perfect sense. People are at the heart of cybersecurity. So my work in that first role was with a company that was helping defense organizations understand their cybersecurity posture. And my role was really talking to people, running focus groups, running interviews, getting to understand cybersecurity from the perspective of different parts of the business, and then really moving into awareness raising, helping people understand the threat and what they can do to better protect themselves.
Gotcha. And, you know, it's interesting because in a lot of cases, I always kind of joke that like some of the technical aspects of cybersecurity, when you're trying to get things done in a business, are easier in some sense than like navigating like the politics and like the social and kind of human aspects of it, right? Like just the how do you actually get a project done? How do you not kind of, you know, end up being that like kind of cybersecurity team and know, or kind of what you touched on as far as like, you know, ultimately you're trying to do a lot of things with cybersecurity. How do you even know like what's working, or how do you kind of measure or think about it? And did that kind of end up being something that seems like kind of a focus area that you've stayed with in your career? Like what kind of attracted you on kind of, you know, having that as a focus, like the kind of human side of cybersecurity, if you will?
Yeah, it was inevitable, really. I was going to focus on the people side. And it's, I think, you know, I love a challenge. And cybersecurity is all about, for me, influence, positively influencing people, engaging with people, helping people understand how cybersecurity applies to them, understanding how they feel about it. So there's a huge element of collaboration that we're usually trying to achieve in this field, and a lot of communication. And we've just not focused on it as much as we've focused on the tech. I think that's changing, and it has changed in recent years, but sometimes it can be easier to sell a board on buying a piece of technology and spending maybe a lot of money on a piece of technology because it seems like that's going to be a simple fix, and it usually is sold as a simple fix. Whereas the human side, there's a few more elements at play.
Yeah. And do you see some kind of, you know, like all things, you know, on the kind of technical side of the security, there's all these kind of patterns that continue to emerge over time, right? Where it's just like companies aren't well managing their attack surface, and that meant one thing 20 years ago, it'll mean a different thing 20 years from now, but it'll still be like a kind of core kind of concept, or maybe this like first principle of how to think about it. Like, is there stuff that you've kind of seen in repetitive ways on the kind of the human side of cybersecurity, whether it's like people bringing their, like, you know, beliefs or biases how they think about security, or kind of how they're in the mix of security, if you will?
Yeah, there's definitely some core trends that I come up against all the time. And these will probably be very familiar with people, whatever role you're in. One is, why would I be a target? Usually it's phrased as like, why would hackers want my data? So that is something we need to tackle very commonly in cybersecurity, helping people understand that a lot of attacks aren't targeted, but also that they do handle sensitive, valuable data that cyber criminals would like to get their hands on. People will also think, it's never going to happen to me. And partly I attribute this to the optimism bias, where neuroscience research has shown overwhelming majority of people, like 80% of people around the world, regardless of any kind of demographic factor, people think that their personal future is going to be good. We might look at the world and think, oh, everything's bad, but me, I'm going to be fine. I'm not going to get ill. I'm not going to get divorced. I'm not going to get hacked. And so when we give the negative statistics around cybersecurity and try and scare people with how bad it is, what that does, I think, psychologically, is tell people, okay, it's really bad, but not me. I'm going to be fine.
Totally. Yeah. And like on that point of, like, you know, people's kind of beliefs and, you know, the bias of how they see things, like, you know, it's probably not like a cybersecurity specific thing, but like the idea of like, how do you change people's minds, right? Like, you're talking in terms of people think it's not going to happen, you know, to them, that like all these stats don't necessarily kind of apply. Like what are some of the ways that, you know, maybe like practitioners or people working at a company where they are trying to change kind of beliefs around, you know, cybersecurity in general, like what are some of the things that you think works for trying to do that? Realize it's hard, but...
Yeah, we are often trying to sort of change hearts and minds, or certainly engage and influence. And one thing I find to be really powerful is storytelling. So rather than focusing on the big, scary statistics, I think storytelling can be a great way to bring this to life. People are really interested in the stories around cybersecurity, and there's some fascinating ones out there. So if you're in an organization and you're wanting to engage people, using stories that are out there in the public domain can be really impactful, particularly if people can relate to that story. So if it's sector specific, or if it's, you know, a certain demographic that you're trying to hit, but also if you have any internal incidents you can talk about. And I know this is sensitive, and some organizations are more open with this than others, but helping people see that actually this does happen, this happens in your organization. Yep. And it can either be a full-on incident or a near miss. And it also helps to create this culture of transparency, where people feel a bit more comfortable talking about this stuff because it's being led by example.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I often kind of talk in terms of leadership and other things. There's always a lot in the business world that try to drive to, like, give the metrics and numbers and everything else. But there's a difference in kind of like the way we might present or think about how we measure things versus like we actually galvanize change, right? And I think, like, storytelling, to your point, is so key to that. And I think it's not the thing that I think a lot of security practitioners or leaders think about as far as like a skill set, right? Like, I'd be curious to get your take. Maybe that's changing, but I often see people, they're very focused on, you know, I'm going to get a variety of technical certifications and other sort of stuff like that. And that's definitely all fine and good. But, you know, sometimes truly that ability to be a great storyteller is the difference of accomplishing kind of what's needed. But I'm curious how you kind of see that in practice out there. Is that something you think folks are kind of waking up to, or more or less good at, or there's still a lot to be educated.
I think people are definitely waking up to the power of it. I think we're talking about this stuff so much more than we used to. And so people are more aware of it. People are aware that they need to communicate. And I think one thing we're seeing is much more focus on empathy as well. So people understanding, actually, if I want to make a difference, I can't just tell people this from my perspective. I have to understand it from theirs. And I have to phrase this in a way that is going to be relevant to them. So I think we're definitely making progress.
Yeah. Something just to put like a million exclamation marks next to what you just said is that kind of empathy. I definitely think the word gets thrown around in a sense, but like the way that you put it, I think is like the nuance there of you have to be able to really look at the situation from somebody else's eyes, right? Like you have to be able to kind of understand it of how they're going to think about it. Like how do you move them from where they're at versus hoping you're just going to kind of like, you know, dictate or command down, like, you know, it should be this, and like, why doesn't the world kind of see it as I see it, right? Versus like, you have to understand how they see the world to kind of bring them along. So that's a great point for sure. So yeah, when you're thinking in terms of like what you were saying about like communicating and kind of storytelling, is there any like, you know, I mean, in some simple sense, kind of like what makes a great story, right? Like if you are trying to, you know, kind of move and kind of bring a business along, like, is there any kind of key points that you might try to tell people to think about when they're telling a good story or attempting to tell a good story?
One thing that people often talk about, I'm sure people will have heard about, is having a good hook. So that first opening, and we see this a lot on, you know, YouTube videos and things that are out there. You see it on Netflix things where they'll show you like the little snippets of what's to come. So actually a great story sometimes starts with the end to actually engage people. Rather than starting with all of the detail, actually starting with the end and the impact. So you've got people's attention and then they're hooked, they're interested, and they want to hear the detail about how it got to that end, to that impact.
Yeah, I love that. I hear that even from, you know, being on the vendor side of stuff, and, you know, we're talking to customers about how we can help. And it's like, there's a tendency even for vendors, like you want to do this kind of grand build up to the thing versus just kind of like start with the end and kind of work back from there. It's a different way. And I definitely agree of, I always think of, this is obviously different form of storytelling, but I always think of that, you know, that opening slide, you know, how you're kind of hooking people, definitely to your point, is like so crucial. And I always remember one of the first kind of cyberpunk whatever kind of books that I read was Snow Crash, and the opening line, which I did have to bring up here because I don't have it committed to memory, but it goes, the sky was the color of a television tuned to a dead channel, and you're like, tell me more, you know. And it's just kind of like painting a picture, right? And how do you kind of recommend for people? I mean, I think this storytelling thread that we're on is like so important, because I think it's the skill that's not often thought about as needed in cybersecurity, but I think it can be equal or more. Like, you can kind of be okay at some of the technical parts, but if you can't ultimately drive change, then it doesn't really matter, right? You know, is there any kind of pointers that you would give folks as far as how to kind of get better at this? I mean, repetition obviously is probably one, right? Like, you have to actually try and fail enough. I think we all have our stories of success and failure and figuring this out. But any kind of pointers of somebody that maybe is trying to think about how to get better at this aspect of the...
One thing is absolutely practice, and that can be practicing on, you know, people that you know and, you know, loved ones, friends that maybe aren't in the industry, and see like, does this, can I tell you a story and see if it resonates with you, and get them to be to be brutally honest and to tell you actually when you started to lose them, when they started to maybe switch off. And you'll probably find it's in the details. So details that people like is around kind of impact, or is around some of the emotional elements, how something made someone feel, and then they can relate to that feeling. Where we tend to lose people in cybersecurity, from my experience, is when we get into the technical weeds and the technical details. And I completely understand why people want to do that. When they're telling a story in cybersecurity, I think partly it can often come down to enthusiasm. We find the technical details really fascinating. But I think it also comes down to, we're used to communicating with our peer group. And I often have to fight against this if I'm doing mainstream media stuff. I have to remind myself I'm not communicating with my peer group. So I don't have to tell the technical details. I don't have to prove that I know them. I can actually take this and, you know, represent, explain what's happened in more simple terms and take out some of the technical stuff. But it can be tempting to want to include the technical stuff because you feel like you're being judged on your knowledge of that. So I think we have to fight against that and fight against the curse of knowledge a little bit, where we have to try and meet people where they're at and understand their level of awareness and kind of tailor our communications according to that.
Gotcha. Good advice. So little segue. I'm looking at a photo of you that looks like you're in some sort of like a palace or something with Prince William. I'm not great at it. Pinning something on you. What is happening in this photo? And that's my best attempt to describe for our audio listeners. But yeah, Prince William pinning something on you in what looks to be a very, very old building. How did this come about? And like, what is this?
Absolutely, you've got the core.
Other than it looks epic.
You've got the core details, absolutely. Right. And I will tell you, internally in my brain, what was happening at that point was like, just like, what? This is wild. But what was happening? I received the MBE honor last year from King Charles. So I was awarded an MBE, which is a royal honours system in the UK, recognising people for services. So for me, it was recognised, you know, for my services to cybersecurity. So people received this honour, this award, and then you are invited to an investiture, so essentially a ceremony where a member of the royal family pins the medal on you. So I was invited to Windsor Castle for the investiture a couple of months ago, and you only find out on the day who is going to be pinning the medal on you. So I found out just as I was waiting in Windsor Castle. Yep. Windsor Castle dates to William the Conqueror, so it's pretty old, and there's loads of fancy stuff and
very, very gold. I'm seeing a lot of gold.
So they do tell you some of the royal protocol. They tell you what to expect. And when you turn up on the day, they do kind of tell you, like, this is where you're going to walk. This is how you're going to turn. This is how you're going to curtsy or bow. But it's, your brain is just overloaded with how surreal and amazing the whole thing is. Luckily, I had practiced my curtsy. When I was practicing it, it was great. And then when I came to do it, I was amazed. I stayed upright. I felt so wobbly and more nervous than I've felt about anything in a very long time. But Prince William was very kind. He asked some great questions, and it was just an amazing experience.
So also on top of having Prince William give you honors and all the craziness that ensued there, I know you've also released a series of different books. Is there any in particular that you'd want to highlight? And one of the notes I had is that there's a Taylor Swift story somehow in there. I'm not sure how that sounded interesting.
Sure. Yeah. So that's in my first book, Confident Cybersecurity, which I wrote Confident really for the version of me that I spoke about that was starting out in this industry and wanting to try. I think this industry is so broad and it's so deep at the same time. It's a lot. There's a lot to learn. And I think particularly if you're thinking of joining the field, if you're new to the field, or if you're, say, working adjacent to it, so you're a board member or you're a developer and you want to just dig into cybersecurity a bit more, that's really who I wrote Confident for. And in one of the chapters, I wanted to bring to life how cybersecurity is so relevant now to absolutely every industry, whether you are a footballer, a fashion designer, an influencer, a small business owner, or, you know, a pop star like Taylor Swift. So I talk a little bit about what cybersecurity kind of means to Taylor Swift and some of the information that's out there over how she manages, for example, stopping her songs from being leaked before they go public. So when she collaborated with Ed Sheeran, it was very tightly managed how she was going to share her work on that song with Ed Sheeran, to the point where he basically got to listen to it on an air-gapped device. You know, it wasn't sent over the internet.
She's basically like implementing least privilege.
Right, exactly. This is why the InfoSec Taylor Swift Twitter account, I think, is so genius. Because if any pop star is secretly also a cybersecurity leader, I would well believe that it's Taylor Swift.
That's awesome. And you have the first book, Confident Cybersecurity. I mean, that sounds great, because we have equally folks that are turning into the podcast that are kind of earlier in their career or even just interested getting into security. And it sounds like a great place to kind of start to be thinking about things. And then I understand you also have a pretty soon to be released book that's Hacked: The Secrets Behind Cyber Attacks. I'm curious if you can just kind of expand on what the focus is there and when that's coming.
Yeah. So as I say, with Confident Cybersecurity, that came out 2020, and it was really aimed for people who want to maybe move into this field or are new in the field. And thankfully, got a great reception. So it went to second edition last year. And then I started talking to my publishers about, hey, let's maybe think about another book. And this, I think, is really come out of my awareness raising work, where I'm so conscious that people are really interested in cybersecurity. I think people have never been so interested in it, never been so aware that it does apply to them. But they maybe see the headlines, you know, they get a high level idea of some of the attacks. But what I wanted to do with Hacked was take each threat and write a chapter that really peels back the layers on those threats, that explains in simple terms what they mean, and to our earlier point about storytelling, that tells the stories of cybersecurity. So in Hacked, I tell so many stories and really focus on how something has happened and what was the impact and what is the reality of cybersecurity and cybercrime today. I interviewed people from across the field, investigators, ex-fraudsters, victim advocates, you know, investigative journalists, people who all have different experiences of this subject, and really look to bring it to life, but in a way that empowers people. So every chapter I end with telling people what they can do in really simple terms to better protect themselves, so that this book, yes, opens people's eyes to the reality of cybercrime, but leaves them empowered rather than scared about what they can do to enjoy technology, but more safely and securely.
And without giving away, because definitely people should check out the book when it's out, but was there any story, maybe just the kind of high level, any story that kind of surprised you when you were kind of digging into things and kind of doing the work and research on it?
A chapter that I think will open people's eyes is the one on romance fraud and just the scale of romance fraud, a lot of which is hidden because people don't either know that they're being scammed or they don't report the crimes. So really, we only know about the tip of the iceberg, but the way in which people are manipulated, the extent to which scammers will go to like play a long con and really make people feel that they are in a true relationship and then just ruthlessly take the victims for as much money as they have, particularly with the evolution of romance fraud into so-called pig butchering and these cryptocurrency schemes that we see that operate a lot like romance fraud. We're talking about huge amounts of money going to the criminals and people losing their entire life savings, pension pots, everything.
I've heard of things like that happening, but I didn't know it was to the point there's like, you know, the term for it. And like, it's sounds like an entire kind of industry in itself. You know, it brings up something interesting of we've talked in terms of the human side of working in security and becoming a great storyteller to, you know, help improve security. But, you know, you're kind of getting into the fact that attackers themselves are also great at trying to craft the right story to social engineer you, to compromise, to romance you into giving away your pension, etc. I mean, crazy things. Like anything that you've kind of, you know, seen evolving from, you know, I think of the early days 25 plus years ago. I mean, you know it was like phishing emails with typos and horribleness. Now you're jumping to like a world in which people are using ChatGPT and AI to like write more convincing. I'm just curious from the kind of adversarial side of, you know, they're equally trying to tell a great story to kind of nefarious means, how you've seen that kind of evolve over time.
In Hacked, I interviewed someone who has been convicted of fraud, and he talked about the way in which he kind of put himself into the mindset of the person he was trying to imitate on the phone. He kind of had a persona of someone that he was trying to be as far as his victim was concerned. And he really thought about actually what would that person have going on in their lives? You know, what would they be doing after work? You know, how bored would they be at work? So how should his voice sound and what was going to, you know, have the most influence on the person that he was speaking to? So another thing with criminals, and we see this with romance fraud, is how much they share information with each other. When it comes to romance fraud, they share literal playbooks of tactics of this is the kind of story to outline. These are the questions to ask. If you get pushback, this is how to respond. These are the kind of pet names people like. So they have tactics all laid out in a playbook that they then will share with each other to be as organized, sophisticated, as successful as they possibly can be.
Wow, that's methodical, in a way that it's like surprising and not, right? Like where it's like, I think I'm always surprised by it, but like, the degree at which, you know, kind of adversaries, we've seen it in years past, even where like, you know, it was different attacks where they were trying to do like watering holes and get people to land on the right search results, and like, they basically became as good at SEO as like, you know, practitioners out of business doing it legitimately. Right. And it's always surprising, but at some sense, like not like how do you see your, you know, I mean, it's the always kind of open-ended and a lot changing fast as far as like kind of AI and kind of usage in all sorts of aspects of security for good and bad. But curious how you're kind of thinking about kind of AI as it relates to kind of the human side of cybersecurity and kind of where things are going.
Yeah, I feel like for the last few years, we have seen the signs of where this is moving in terms of cybercrime and AI. If we think about deepfakes coming along in 2017 and how much computing power and how much data it took to be able to mimic someone else in video or audio. Now we're at a point where, unfortunately, of course, it's a lot easier and it takes a lot less data to create a pretty good deepfake.
Yep.
So we know from the research out there that cyber criminals are using LLMs to craft more convincing phishing emails, to do reconnaissance, to, you know, look for how help to understand how technical vulnerabilities work, so kind of translate some of the technical stuff. So we're at a point, I think, on the human side where phishing emails and messages we can no longer give that advice. That wasn't great advice anyway, but that advice around look for bad spelling and grammar, things like that, because cyber criminals can use AI to be much more convincing and to send more sophisticated phishing emails. But of course, we've seen this move away from phishing emails. It's still the most popular form of phishing over email, but we've seen the move to more messaging, to more social media, to more phone calls. And what we have already started to see is cases using AI. The big case recently of the Hong Kong company where somebody transferred 25 million from a video conference call with deepfakes. And we're seeing more phishing phone calls using deepfake voice, the fake kidnapping type of phone calls where parents and grandparents are receiving calls, being told your child has been kidnapped, and then they hear the child's voice. And of course, it's an AI imitation. We're seeing that move already. And I think, unfortunately, that's only going to increase.
Yeah, it's interesting talking about the evolution of the things that you're mentioning. And, you know, it always reminds me, I talk in terms of cybersecurity is kind of this race without a finish line, right? And there's always some new evolution. And on one hand, it's what makes, I think, the field so exciting, right? There's always something new to learn. There's always new techniques. On the other hand, it can be a tiring field in a different way, right? Because you have all these different kind of milestones along the way, but the job's kind of never done at some sense, right? You just have these different marker points. And, you know, so one of the things I always like to ask guests is kind of, you know, what advice would you give to your younger self? But I think equally, you know, any advice that you would offer to folks that are maybe kind of, you know, getting started in their career, but equally for the folks that have been doing it for the, you know, 10 years and, maybe you're always trying to find, you know, in the way that you think in the start of your career, you're finding purpose and kind of path. I think if you've done something long enough, you know, you come back to some of those same questions. So however you want to take that from an advice perspective.
Sure. I would say in this field, we naturally look for, of course, the flaws, the problems. There can be 100 times where something goes right, and we're very tuned into that one time it goes wrong. We have to be. That's the nature of our work. But I think that can lead to, or it can contribute to, this sense of we're never making progress. That sense, as you say, the goalposts constantly change. And so we can feel like things aren't getting better. And whether you're working on the technical side or the human side, I think sometimes it can be hard to keep track of progress. So really pay attention to the wins. And I tell people this when they're struggling, when they're new in the industry, even keep like a document where you keep track of the wins. Even if that's just someone who said like, oh, hey, great job with that training, or, oh, you told me about a phishing email. I went home and I told my kids about it. It was so interesting. Just really paying attention to actually when you get that positive feedback, when you do know you have made a difference. Because in cybersecurity, we have made a lot of progress in the last few decades. We've just got a way to go, and it takes time. So we have to pay attention to when we do chip away at the problem and when we do actually make a positive difference.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic advice. And, you know, in some sense, both for cybersecurity, but I think life in general, right? We're always kind of living in societies where it's like on to the next problem, the next worry, the next thing. And we're not always great professionally, and I think personally, on kind of looking back at like the things we've been able to achieve and do. And so it's a fantastic point to end on. But I'd also love you, if maybe just at the end here, if you could just tell me a little bit about your company, your guys' focus area, kind of what's the day job look like for you?
So at Sygenta, we work with all sorts of organizations all around the world and help them really understand how to improve their cyber risk profile. From my point of view, what I lead on is the human side. So I help organizations understand and improve their cybersecurity culture, and I help raise awareness. That can be from giving a one-off talk through to consultancy, through to developing content and programs for organizations. Also do a lot of keynote speaking and obviously the books.
That is awesome. Jessica, it's been fantastic talking to you this morning. The whole reason, I've said this before, that we do this podcast is to try to tell some of the human side of cybersecurity and like the people working in it. And so I think you're an amazing resource as literally somebody that's focused on this as a thing. And so we'll make sure to have links to your work, your books, your company's site. I implore people to kind of get in touch and follow you. I think you've already shared a bunch of amazing, like very pragmatic stuff that people can take and go apply. And I can't thank you enough for your time today.
Thank you so much, Mark. And thanks everyone for listening. Mm-hmm.